This is Jeff Davis with the Alignment Podcast, where we explore sales and marketing alignment strategy for B2B businesses. Make sure to visit jeffdavis2.com for all things alignment. Now let's talk about how to create togetherness.
Today's guest is Jen Jacober, president of EverChanges, an experienced design consulting firm that helps clients undergoing significant transformation, change, or improvement initiatives. Jen has significant experience with building innovative organizational structures, frameworks, and sales enablement programs in the B2B organization. In our conversation, we discussed how cultural issues and organizational misalignment are related, who should own aligning sales and marketing for it to stick in the organization, how misalignment between sales and marketing began in the first place, and the best way to start an alignment effort to set yourself up for long-term success. With that said, let's jump into the episode. Jen, thank you for being on the podcast today. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and I really appreciate that you invited me and you wanted to spend some time with me today, Jeff.
Yes, I'm excited to dive into this whole idea of how do you help an organization go through transformation, and specifically, what is the strategy and thought process through this alignment thing that we're all trying to figure out. So before we get started, I just want you, for those that are not familiar with you and your work, tell us who you are, tell us what your business is, and then really, you know, why are you so passionate about sales and marketing alignment?
All right. Well, I'm Jen Marie Jacober. I'm president of my company, EverChanges. I really sort of came into this with a management consultant background, and I found myself in a few different roles where I was straddling sales and marketing in a sales enablement function. And then that's really why this topic is of interest to me. But more importantly, I believe that many organizations are suffering from misalignment, not only between sales and marketing, but between all the organizations that are tying back to sales and the overall end goal of the organization, which is to, you know, support customers and to continue to grow.
Nice. And so I know, as I kind of learned about you, I think there's a difference between cultural issues and organizational alignment. So help us be able to decipher the two as they relate to misalignment.
That's really great. I love that you asked that. And why? Because I think it's fascinating how often we hear about culture and that culture is really the primary cause of misalignment. And I would say, I don't know that that's completely true. I do think a poor culture is symptomatic of misalignment. And that if we think about culture as behaviors, as expectations, as the way a norm is established, we have to ask ourselves, well, how is that norm getting established? It gets established because of what's organized behind the scenes in the structure. And that's why this misalignment is happening. So I do think culture is a key aspect to all of this, because you do need to be mindful of what norms you're establishing inside your company. Because those norms are becoming the truth versus something you might have documented in a value statement. For example, if you've got a value statement in your company that says all ideas are good ideas, but then your leaders and your managers reject new ideas that employees bring to the table, that's not going to work. So now that cultural sentiment that you've put out there is actually misaligned, because you're not adhering to it. And there's a lot of different ways you can think about it, but honestly, it really comes down to the structure and the behaviors and expectations of the people in it. So it's not just about the culture.
So then as a CEO or executive team, if I'm looking at where do I direct my initial efforts, should I be reorganizing my sales and marketing teams or whatever that revenue generation part of the business is first, or should I be looking at culture first? Which one has the more immediate impact in order to set us up for success?
I think it's a really good question. And I don't know if it's about the roles in the departments specifically or about the culture specifically. I think that you almost have to look at all of them at once. And that sounds overwhelming when I say it out loud. But if you just try to fix one thing, but you don't look at everything else that's connected to it, it's likely not going to work. Think about a house renovation. I want to go remodel my bathroom. I discovered that the pipes weren't put in there correctly. Oh no, what am I going to do? Well, I've obviously got to fix my pipe problem. If I don't fix my pipe problem, I'm not going to have a new renovated bathroom that's working properly. So I think it's very similar in an organizational structure, and that it's very easy to assume that your org structure design is a constraint versus something that can be innovated. And this is where I think we can make the most progress, because if we start thinking that we can innovate on how we're structured and the kinds of roles that we have and the kinds of departments that we have, then we open up so many possibilities. And this will enable us to have better alignment between sales and marketing, but really between all departments. And so it's hard to say we could just tweak one thing, because we need to think about how that one thing is interacting with the other structural elements. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes complete sense. So what that makes me go into next is then, because I get this question all the time and I really want to hear from your perspective, who should really own the alignment initiative? So a lot of people have asked, should we have a chief revenue officer that's in charge of sales and marketing? Should sales lead the alignment effort? Should marketing lead it? Should it be the CEO? Who in your mind really should own this to drive it through?
Yeah, I think it really depends on how a company is structured. I mean, ultimately, the CEO should own everything about structural alignment in a company if the CEO is responsible for the company's success. And all those other roles are there to support the CEO. Now, if we start to think about establishing a single role like a chief revenue officer, I'm not saying that it can't work, because I think that it could, but you've got to think about how are you going to make it work if you don't address what those other roles are doing, what those other departments might be doing. So what I mean by that, you know, ultimately organizations have swim lanes and boundaries between departments. They set them up as islands with their own budget and goals. So if we just stand up this new chief revenue officer and they've got maybe sales and marketing as their departments, what happens if finance has different goals and objectives? And what happens if the product management team or the go-to-market teams have different objectives and goals? Then there could still be misalignment problems that are going to cause issues with being able to support the customer, serve the customer, and ultimately grow the company. So we could say it's just a single role, and I'm not opposed to that thinking at all, but let's be mindful if we do that, we've got to address what the other roles are doing as well and what those other departments are doing, so that the hierarchy and the rules and all the other complexity isn't in the way of alignment success.
And what got us here as far as the silos? Like, I've had several conversations about why there are these silos that exist between sales and marketing. So beyond like the historical combative toxic relationship, when did we start creating these silos, or have they already existed? But what's the basis of that?
Well, if you really think about why organizations structured these departments in the first place, it was to establish repeatable process, establish standards. And those were really necessary when we were learning how to grow companies and scale companies. And I still think that they are. I just think we need to revisit how they interact with each other. So ultimately, the silo concept is usually driven by something that's misaligned, specifically down to, say, a budget or to the goals and objectives of the department, maybe unstated expectations. I think about every interaction I have every day where, you know, I have an assumption that somebody else knows what I am saying and they understand me. And I don't seek first to understand as much as maybe I should. And I think this happens every day in an organization because there are these norms. You get onboarded to your marketing department and you're told, oh, well, here's how we do things, but you won't find it written down anywhere. And that will continue to go on and on inside the organization unless somebody addresses it. And I think that's really where we get these stovepipes, is that we have these island behaviors happening, sort of these inner company politics, and there's no incentive to work together. And that's why I said earlier that I think it's really ultimately up to the CEO to address it. Because if the top person in the company is not asking everyone to try to work together and to align and isn't looking at the underlying structure to ensure that it's not creating the problem, then the problem is not going to go away just because we stand up a new role or we say we're going to do it in our mission statement.
And two things that you touched on popped out to me. There's an implication about just the language that sales and marketing uses and just not understanding each other there. I know as somebody had been on both sides of the fence, you know, initially starting in sales and transitioning to the brand management and marketing, it is a different language. And a lot of times I've been in meetings with both sales and marketing and they're saying the exact same thing, but in a different way. And so there's a disconnect because of the verbiage they're using. And the other thing I heard you talk about is the onboarding process where you're bringing in new hires and you are perpetuating thoughts and feelings that no longer serve the business. So this is the way we do it, or this is how we interact with sales. And maybe that is just not the way we need to do that moving forward. So how can the onboarding process help us to curve these behaviors and move toward alignment?
Well, I love that. I think onboarding is a great place to start. You really want to set those expectations from the beginning of a new employee starting to work with you. And that means you have to be explicit and you need to be clear. And then you need to make sure that every single interaction that person has with whatever department that they're working with is reinforcing the things that they learned in onboarding. And that's what I really think ultimately the culture should feel like, is if you are purposely designing your culture, then every single thing that you do is connected. And when I say in a meeting, we're going to do X, then we actually do it and we commit to it and we know that we're going to, because of the way that we have trained our people and the way we are incentivizing our departments and the way we are working together to achieve those outcomes.
So let's look at the onboarding process for a little bit. So if you want to change the way that new employees are brought up to speed to ensure that they're in a mindset of alignment, do we then need to have, you know, either a third party or somebody outside of sales and marketing to do that training? Or is it just bringing both sales and marketing into the training? Like, how do you do that? Because it sounds like we have some people that have historical, we'll just say, call it baggage of this is the way we've done it for 10, 15, 20 years. And respectfully, it's going to take them time to change the way they think about their colleagues. It's just, that doesn't happen overnight. So what's the easiest way or most efficient way in order to say, you know, new employees coming in, we're going to get them thinking a different way. How do we do that?
Yeah, I think that's interesting the way you stated it, the idea of maybe a third party. And there could be, right? I think a lot of companies deal with it by having another department called sales enablement. And that might be the way they're trying to address it. And I don't know that that's holistic across the market, but I do see that that happens. I think it's important that a department own their onboarding because they know what is and isn't working. They know what their process is and they know when they need to address the process. And there's different ways that you can handle that. And it really depends on the size of the organization. But let's just say you're a smaller organization. You hire one person a month and you have an onboarding. You might have some training, online training. You may have a manual. You may have a playbook. It could be different types of documentation. And I ask that new employee, hey, when you come in, when you note something that's not working or isn't documented right or isn't explicit, I want you to share it with me. And then we're going to have a way, we're going to have a method or a cadence by which we're going to address that. So we can address that by having that person have ownership of the revision of the onboarding. We can address that by having that person bring all the things that they found to some sort of forum. And again, this gets back to sort of a cultural norming. Is this an acceptable behavior in the company? Is that going to work? If it's not, you might need that third party. You might need an objective third party where people aren't going to feel like you don't have a right to say something isn't working when you're brand new. And it is going to depend. And I don't think one culture can work for all organizations. I believe it's dependent on how that organization formed and what their objectives are. So, you know, I'd love to say that there's an easy button, you know.
Don't call.
Right? Everybody's looking for an easy button. We know that. Yeah. And maybe it really is easier than we think it is. It's just working differently than we've ever worked before. And learning or even unlearning those bad behaviors and then learning the new good behavior takes time. And you've got to have people willing to work at it, willing to have conversations, be open to it, and to do that without bias and to do that without punishment.
And I think to your point, that the department should own their own training makes a lot of sense to me. I think what I've seen also too in my time in large corporate that for me at least resonated is then having people from other departments, you know, representing finance, marketing, those people that I'm going to probably have an immediate interaction with coming in to not only explain their role and what they do, but how I would potentially interact with them or when I would potentially interact with them and what that looks like. Because then I have an expectation of, you know, as a salesperson, oh, okay, marketing does XYZ, the way I might be able to leverage them, you know, in my daily activities, XYZ. Because I think that then starts that idea of collaboration and that you know that you have a partner in another functional area.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that gets to that. Yeah. So I also had a chance to look through your work. And one of the themes I really, really want to dive into in the little time that we have left is how do we motivate people to become customer-centric versus focus on their individual missions? I think that also adds to this misalignment piece where people are so myopically focused on how do I achieve my goals versus thinking more holistically of how what I do contributes to us being more customer-centric and ultimately driving revenue.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Will, I think about it is that there is a point where we need to just really review expectations in the organization. And again, I'm going to go back to, is it explicit? Is it word of mouth? How do we know? And if we've got value statements and we have specific sentiment about being customer-centric, how is that sentiment showing up in our design of our organization and our structure? Am I going to see it in my job description? Am I going to see it in my performance evaluation? Am I going to see it in how I get my bonus or how I get my commission? Is it clear that the customer-centric sentiment is a part of everything that we're doing at the department level, at the leader level, and the employee level? So I think that's one way to think about it. Another way to think about it is be open about what maybe an individual goal is and what a company goal is and whether or not those things are in alignment. I think it's possible many times to have employees working for you, and I've had this happen to me frequently in my career, where they really don't want to do the job that they're in. They're really unhappy. They're not going to try because they really are just trying to take a paycheck home. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, if that is the disconnect, then how can you coach that person to find goal alignment for themselves that aligns also to the company goals? And how can we coach them and help them to think differently about it so that they can be more effective in what they're doing for the company? And I don't know that I've ever really seen big companies to do that personally, places I've worked and where I've consulted, where we really even care about the individual person's goal. But maybe if we did, we could find a way to align that goal back to the goals of the organization and get much more lift out of that person. They'll be happier. They'll be more productive. And it's just, again, a different way of thinking, a different way of working.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I like that. And so a little bit of tangible advice for those CEOs or sales and marketing executives that may be listening today, what can they do starting tomorrow as far as pushing toward alignment? Like, where do they start? I know a lot of people probably are sitting stagnant because they're like, this is a lot to do. This is a big effort. This takes time. But how does that process start? What does that look like?
Yeah, generally when I've done this kind of work in the past, it's always with an assessment, right? I think if you're going to do this on your own inside of an organization, that a good place to start is to think about what you're trying to achieve and then reflect on what's documented and structured and how the organization is making decisions and how they are addressing goals and what kind of incentives are associated with that. And just try to thread it through. You know, think about it as a journey. Is the journey working? If I state a goal, an annual goal, and I look at how I performed last year, where did things fall apart and where did they go well? And I think by examining what happened there on that journey, it's going to illuminate where work can be done. And it could be because marketing and sales is not aligned. Maybe that's the gut feeling. Maybe there's proof. Well, if there's proof, then let's look at how those two teams are set up. Are those two teams set up as islands, or are they set up to be collaborative teams working together with the same goals and the same objectives? And I think if we can think that way, it doesn't feel as overwhelming. And yes, there's going to be more work to do potentially. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, there's consultants in the world because we're here to help. But also if you've got other teams inside your organization, say like a sales enablement function, maybe that function can help as well. And think about how you can leverage that third party type organization that you already have today in ways that can give you lift so you can get better alignment between your departments.
One key takeaway that you think is the most important thing to keep top of mind for any executive that is focused on aligning their sales and marketing teams?
For me, it's that when you're trying to align, you really want those sales and marketing teams to work well together. Make sure you look at all the other departments that are also supporting them. Because any other structural misalignment is going to jeopardize the success if it's not addressed. If you only look at two departments and you have 100, and 80 of those departments are still touching those other two departments, you're going to have other things that will get in the way of success here.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, Jen, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate all your insights and looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Yeah, I am too. Thanks so much, Jeff. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Don't forget to visit me at jeffdavis2.com and follow me on Twitter at jeff_davis2. Did today's conversation resonate with you? Then share with your colleagues to help the Alignment Podcast grow. Join us for the next episode where we continue to talk about how to create togetherness.